All right, welcome back, everybody. So, radical format shift alert here. Last week, I put out a couple of podcasts with my friends from real life in my fantasy football league, talking through everything that's been going on with that. And we've heard the feedback, and it seemed like people were into the idea of talking about football. It was a situation where, very understandably, and this is a big time my bad here on this one. It makes complete sense that it's very difficult to track the actual happenings with 10 people you've never met and don't care about versus, NFL players and teams that you follow week to week. So, massive deviation taking place here starting now. What we are going to be doing here today, and we'll see how it goes. The new focus is going to be on another shared interest of every single member of my fantasy football league, which is the NFL from a gambling perspective, which is, I suspect at least, something that a reasonable number of our listeners out there may have an interest in themselves. So that is more along the lines of what we are going to be doing today and potentially going forward. And joining me to get into everything that we have to look forward to here in week 14 as the NFL season starts to the regular season starts to wind down, I guess, and the postseason starts to come into focus here are two friends of mine from that very fantasy football league. One man you have potentially heard before in the division draft episode there. And I will say, there will probably be some random things that come up along the way about my fantasy league. And if any of that interests you, feel free to go back and listen to those old episodes from last week, but by no means are they going to be required listening, hopefully, here today. But if you did listen to those, you may have heard this gentleman. Welcome back to the show, Lucas Brower. Luke, how are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you for having me again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you were someone that I was really excited to have the podcast world get to hear from for the first time, and even more so this time around, I would say, now that you know you were going to be on the record instead of being subjected to it against your will 3 months after the fact. I am really looking forward to hearing. It's been a little while since I feel like we've gotten to hear your actual football takes. There's been a lot of fantasy league takes as our regular season has been coming to a close, and many of them actually have pertained to the other guest here today. Luke has had a bit to say, and understandably so. These two gentlemen, as I'm sure will be alluded to, were in a hotly contested battle for last place this season in our league. The other guy joining us here is my great friend in real life, Derek Vanna. Vanna, what's going on?
Hey, Colin, how are we doing? Very a warm welcome there. The two gentlemen fighting for last place. But I'm excited to be here. I'm excited for the switch up here. I am excited to hear Luke's real football takes. This is gonna be fun.
Well, I was gonna say, I think Vanna, you are someone that I don't even know if I could do this first episode like this without, just because I am definitely gonna be relying on you to know a lot more about the actual NFL teams here than either of myself or Lucas. No offense, Luke, of course.
None taken, of course, none taken.
Respect a very big deal around these parts, but I think we're all pretty realistic with our expectations in that regard. But guys, before we dive into what we have coming up here on Sunday and beyond, I wanted to get your takes on what we saw go down last night as Week 14 kicked off with the New England Patriots and LA Rams here. And I think it is very much worth, before we even get into the specifics of the game, flagging up in case anyone is new to me. I'm from New England. I myself am not a Patriots fan, but these two gentlemen both are. And I would love to hear a bit, and I'll start with you, Vanna, about what it's like watching the Patriots being legit bad this year.
So I'll just sort of preface this by Luke and I are both Patriots fans, but I am much more of the emotional Patriots fan than Lucas is. I think so anyways. I'm much more on the roller coaster of being very bad or very good. Luckily, we've been very good most of the time, and I'm sort of spoiled in that aspect. But yeah, when things look bleak, I am one to sort of go down the into the tubes. But to answer the question, I think that I don't think they're legit bad this year. I think that the offense is bad, and they're playing, you know, they're playing offense with sort of a goal line back in Cam Newton. He can't really throw it any further than 15 yards, it seems like. They were trying to figure some things out at the beginning of the season where he just started to turn the ball over in really weird spots. So then they had to, you know, draw the offense back even further than it was. But the offense hasn't really looked the part of an NFL offense since, I think, really the third and fourth quarter of week two against Seattle. But that was when Seattle had a bad defense. So, yeah, it's tough to watch the Patriots in this situation. We all have friends spread across New England that like to be on the contrarian side of things and either root for the Jets, the Steelers, the Ravens, things like that. And those people are starting to sort of get their first laugh in about 20 years. So it's interesting seeing that side of it.
Yeah. Luke, does it feel like watching the same team than it did for the last two decades to you?
Definitely not. But I still have fun watching them. I mean, it's kind of nice in a weird way to have them be underdogs again, because I remember, you know, the first season I ever followed was the season that they won the Super Bowl. And I remember how they were underdogs. That's true, though. I mean, I followed a few seasons before, I guess, a little bit, but I was too young to totally get it. But I'm still a huge Patriots fan, and I think being 6-7 doesn't mean that they're out. So I root for them still, you know. You can tell who the phony fans are right now, though. Not to say Derek is a phony fan, but there are a lot of them out there too pessimistic about it. But the reality is they're still in the hunt.
Yes, excuse me, Lucas. I by no means want to suggest that at 6-7 they are mathematically eliminated. It just does not appear that this is going to be ring number 7 here for Belichick. But
it could be, though.
It certainly could.
I hear what you're saying.
Not 0%.
They aren't looking great, and I don't really like watching Cam play in the way that I thought I was going to. So I've been a little bit disappointed with him. I'd give him like a C-, honestly.
Are you hoping that Cam comes back next year?
No.
Vanner, are you?
No. No, but I did. I liked Luke's snap reaction there of just an instant no.
When did that change for you? Because you were a big Cam guy.
Yeah, I was excited.
I mean, man, I was so excited. I still am kind of excited. Like, I get excited pregame when I see Cam getting ready to play. Like, I want so badly for him to be good. I like Cam as the person. I liked him, like, as a player. He's just, like, a complete shell of himself. It almost feels like, not to, like, get into a different sport, but it almost feels like the first year Gordon Hayward got back, where you were like, this wasn't the guy that I thought he was going to be. Something happened along the lines. Obviously, with both of them, it was injury. And you just, like, the whole time he's on the team, you want him so badly to be good. But it's just, it's not working out that way. And I just have to, I feel like everybody just has to move on from Cam, that he's just not that MVP guy anymore. And he's not even really close to it. I don't know if he's an NFL starter anymore.
Wow. Yeah. So at this moment, Derek, do you see Bill Belichick, I will say 5 years from now, is he still the head coach of the Patriots?
In terms of the question, I think it all, I don't know if this is a cop-out answer, but I think it all depends on him. He's going to write that sort of where he wants to. I don't think there'll be any sort of parting ways or anything like that. I think in 5 years, I think he is still coach of the Patriots. I think the Patriots probably move on to a bridge guy this year with a draft pick. I'd even like to go on record. I mean, I could be completely wrong with this, but saying that I'd like to see Carson Wentz on the Patriots.
Wow. Luke, would you be into that?
I don't think so. I'd rather
would
have
Isaac be into that after this year.
I don't know if Isaac would be into that. I don't know though. I get excited about, like, I thought it was gonna be fun to watch Cam, because I was excited about his running, and like, yeah, he's rushed for a lot of touchdowns, but he's not as like nimble as I remember him being. He's a little bit sluggish compared to what I remember it as. But I would rather just some random young guy, honestly.
Yeah, and I just to clarify, by no means did I mean to suggest that if Belichick can't turn things around, he's going to get fired in the next 5 years. I just wondered if he didn't see another path towards a Super Bowl relatively soon, if he might decide to call it a career there. But Luke, what's it been like for you watching whatever you've seen of Tom in Tampa Bay this year?
I mean, I owned him in fantasy for quite a time, and I loved watching him play. And he looked – it was really weird at first, but then I got really into it, and still he's still Tom. So I miss having him on my fantasy team. I miss having him on the Patriots.
Vanna, what about you?
I'm going to sound like such a brat for saying this, but I feel like I don't really care sort of what Tom is doing this year. It's just like – this year and probably one more year of him in Tampa Bay are just like, yes, it's fine for people to be living in it. But I think that those 2 years, if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, those 2 years are going to be like completely out of everybody's mind, kind of like Montana on the Chiefs. I think that it's just going to, I'm not really into it. I don't really watch his games. I have a few friends down here that are really big Tom Brady fans. That sort of watch all the games and talk about it a lot. I just don't really have – I thought I would preseason have some interest in it and really be kind of into the Tampa Bay games and seeing what he's doing and stuff like that. But if we're speaking genuinely here, I haven't cared all year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So as we start looking at this week's 1 o'clock slate, I mean, I have the games lined up by what time they're being played, but we can certainly feel free to hop around here. I too have not seen a ton of Tom this season beyond whatever's happening on Red Zone, which tends to be things that are going well for the team that's making error there. And as we start previewing here, the first game I actually wanted to look at was Vikings at Bucks. The Buccaneers giving 6.5 here at home against Minnesota, who it seems like has at least recently been keeping themselves alive in the hunt. I don't know that they have necessarily Super Bowl aspirations here, but I was somewhat surprised to see such a, what in my mind was kind of a high point spread here, just because it looks like they may kind of be forced to give Dalvin Cook the ball 30 times this week, just for lack of other options. So Vanna, does either side of that stand out to you, or is this a, I would avoid it because I haven't seen enough of them spot for you?
Actually, I don't know how in depth you want to get with this, but I would, be in tune to go with, Minnesota getting the points there. Interestingly enough, Kirk Cousins is, fourth best in the league when getting pressured this year. Obviously Tampa Bay pressures the quarterback a lot, but I thought that that was interesting with, we have a friend in the league, Matt, who lives in Minnesota now, and we'll talk about the Vikings a little bit more than sort of anyone else that we converse with, but how bad Kurt was, you know, a couple of years ago, talking about the offensive line being really bad, him getting sort of sacked all the time, things like that. They get another receiver in there that's really good, and they get Dalvin, who's playing kind of out of his mind this year, and Kirk has kind of stepped up into that decent QB sort of role, and I think that he's able to sort of neutralize that there, and I think that Minnesota getting the 6.5 is in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think I would probably be inclined to go on that side as well. I actually have, over the course of these, selected a couple of the – I think I have 4 or 5 of them that I felt actually, if I were to have to make picks, these would be the ones that I would actually be confident enough to put money down on. But I have enough of a fantasy sweat that I'm not at the point where I have to gamble on lines yet this season. We'll get there soon, I'm sure. But Lucas, you spent a lot of the season with Chris Godwin, if not, I think you eventually traded him. He's one of the players who, like, entering next season interests me the most, especially assuming Tom Brady is back there, because it does seem like a lot of what went on with the Bucs wide receivers, there were a ton of injuries and up and down games, and Mike Evans catching a bunch of 1 and 2 yard touchdowns and making a lot of the numbers just kind of look weird and give us a pretty unreliable data set here, I would say, for how to be gauging some of the players that, assuming things are looking roughly the same, Bruce Arians is back as the head coach, letting them do whatever they want, basically, I feel like have some of the highest upside entering next year. I don't need you to tip your hand too much, but are you still a big-time Chris Godwin believer?
I mean, dude, I had him. I traded him. I got him back. Like, I'm not that big of a believer. I would have loved to have made a deal with you if I knew you were this big of a Godwin fan. He's still on my team right now. He had a bye week 13, which was tough timing. So it's like when you're already eliminated, I can't justify trading him when I'm out of the hunt and I kind of just got to get him to ride on my bench. But I like sweating Chris Godwin, but he was a little banged up and like, you know, when I watched, he was the only guy I was really rooting for. So the games that he was involved, I loved watching him play.
Yeah, I don't even necessarily mean that I love Chris Godwin and think he's wildly underrated. I just am interested by the perceived value of Chris Godwin as a fantasy commodity, which is, this is a real person that is not solely defined by his statistical performances, but for the interests of this conversation, it's like Schrodinger's wide receiver 1.5. I'm not sure if it's going to pan out extremely well, or could certainly have just been kind of a flash in the pan situation. I think generally people are pretty big time Chris Godwin believers, but that's going to be one of the situations I have my eye on next year. I guess the other game in the 1 o'clock slate that really stood out to me as most noteworthy here was Chiefs -7.5 at Miami. Vanna, it seems to me like the Dolphins are playing some pretty legitimate football lately. Obviously, the Chiefs are as well and will presumably continue to be. But what is your take at this hour on the Dolphins as like a threat within the AFC East to the Patriots going forward?
A threat moving forward, I think that they're going to be. I think that the AFC East is going to be very good over the next 5-ish years. Josh Allen has really turned a corner this year, and you have Tua down there in Miami. I don't like this sort of game here. I wouldn't sort of bet it at all. I think it's going to be close to that, to the line. But I just can't really get a read on Miami this year as a team. I know that they're going to be good moving forward. I did like the switch from Fitzpatrick to Tua. I like Fitzpatrick sort of as a personality, maybe a person, I don't know him personally, but I just thought it was the right move. They had sort of Justin Herbert in LA that was sort of getting all the glory. Burrow, everybody kind of knew what he was, but he was also kind of lighting it up as a rookie. And the Dolphins couldn't just be played a fool to see that we have this rookie quarterback that's supposed to be really good, that's now fully healthy, that we're just going to let sit on the bench. But I think that they're a legitimate threat to New England. I think that they're going to be, if depending on what New England can do to figure out an offensive situation, I think we could be looking at the Patriots as the third best team in the AFC East, without a clear path at quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you more nervous about the Dolphins or the Bills?
The Bills. The Bills.
Long term,
I think Josh Allen. Yeah, I think
Josh Bills. Bills for me. They look pretty good.
Yeah.
But the Dolphins look pretty good too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the AFC East to be competitive again. It feels like it's been so long, but
it's been a minute.
It's pretty understandable why no one wants to go into the same division as Bill Belichick and
Bill Brady.
Yeah, everyone's favorite. So, Vanna. As far as the Chiefs are concerned, I know you sorry if this is slightly off. I think it was 25-1 you got the Steelers at to win the Super Bowl. I would guess the Chiefs are your primary concern there. How are you feeling about that and the Steelers' chances against the Chiefs at this point?
I don't really like the Steelers' chances against the Chiefs. I obviously like the bat, but I don't like their chances. I think that they do have a better chance than most things think, though. the Chiefs have been, while they're winning a lot, they have been in some relatively close games. They beat the Panthers by 2. They beat the Raiders by like 4. They beat the Bucks by less than a touchdown. They beat the Broncos by less than a touchdown. Like, they haven't won since the Jets by more than a touchdown. So I think that they're a little bit overrated of where people think that they are. So I still think that the bet is live. I'm not ready to call it dead or anything, but yeah, they're the biggest concern there for sure. And then I think the Breeze is coming back. So the Saints, I think in the NFC would be the next biggest concern after that, but getting to the Super Bowl is the first part.
I mean, the Saints without Breeze might be the next biggest concern. It seems like they're doing pretty well even with him on the sideline. But Luke, I know this is a big time.
Yes, sir.
This is a big time chicken counting moment, and this is going to take you by surprise coming from me. But
love it, dude.
Do you feel like if he were to maintain this pace for like 15 years and win, let's say the same number, let's say 6 Super Bowls, the same number as Tom Brady, that Mahomes has outs to be the greatest of all time?
I mean, yeah, he's got outs to be the greatest of all time. Yeah, he's got outs. He does. Of course he does. But the way that Brady's done it, it's so tough to do what Brady's done. So
what separates, what would have made Brady's run so much more difficult than this hypothetical Mahomes?
I think Brady just aged really smart and really well, and so it all depends on how Mahomes wants to age his body. Brady did a really good job, so he's able to play forever. I mean, I don't know how long Brady could play for. He could probably do it for 5 more years, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, let's just pray that Patrick Mahomes does not Google pliability anytime soon, I guess, if you're a Tom Brady.
Also, stand. Yeah, but Brady never puts himself really in harm's way ever since that season-ended injury he had. He really just falls correctly. He does everything. Mahomes is kind of a wild man out there, which I love, but longevity-wise, it might hurt him a little bit.
What are they called? Nightshades, or what's it called that Brady doesn't eat? He has some crazy diet. Some certain type of vegetable that are too complicated for me to understand. Are apparently really bad.
Tomatoes and strawberries, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say Luke's gonna start spiking Mahomes' diet with all these toxic foods for him. Yeah, I feel like the Chiefs. I know 7.5 is a tricky number to clear in a lot of cases, but even as well as the Dolphins are playing, I feel like with the Steelers being as competitive as they have been, the Chiefs are still in lighted up mode, and I would probably give the points here. Either of you guys feel strongly on that side? Or on that game, not necessarily on that side, excuse me.
It's hard to do the point. I mean, like, I respect those who can view it with, like, giving points. I'm more of a money line thinker myself.
Oh, I didn't write down the money lines.
Well, it's all good. I just – with the points, it's kind of like I don't know how to get there the same way I can get there with the money lines.
But okay, I would imagine – I don't know what it is, but, I mean, the money line's got to be pretty sizable for a 7.5-point spread.
Like, I love it when an underdog gets to play at home. So even though COVID-wise, it doesn't really matter if you're home or away with fans, but – I don't know, like, for some reason I'm enticed to pick the Dolphins on a money line bet.
All right.
I
don't know what it is. I would assume it's like plus 400 or something though.
I'll tell you what, I'm on it right now. Let me just find the actual game. And of course I get a pop-up ad. Money line is Miami's plus 281. Kansas City is minus 351, because that's how money lines work.
Yeah, it's true. They need to. They make too much money, man.
Enjoy the money lines, Luke.
They could just have it be a platform to let us bet with no vig, man.
I'll be over here betting spreads with all the other geniuses.
I really do only bet money lines.
I'll give you 3-1. Or no, let's see. That would be plus 281. I'll give you 3-1 on.
I'll book that, man. I'll book it.
All right. Whatever I'll put up 60 to win 20.
I love it. Yeah.
All right. Booked. So there goes that game. The Titans also giving 7.5 at Jacksonville. And incidentally, We have 15 matchups remaining this week after the Patriots and Rams are off the board. 10 of them feature road favorites, so there could be some spicy witching hour going on here. Sorry, guys. For that's a podcast. there could be some drama playing out here in the late portion of these games. Titans -7.5 at Jacksonville, which I noticed opened at -9.5 and has gone down to only 7.5. Vanna, where are you at this moment on the legitimacy of the Tennessee Titans as like a up and coming powerhouse possibility in the NFL?
Define powerhouse, because I'm going to be on the record saying this.
So last season, correct me if I'm wrong, last season they made it to the AFC Championship.
They did. Yeah,
and then blew a double-digit lead to the Chiefs. I don't necessarily mean like Super Bowl contender, but I will say viable threat to make it back to another AFC Championship or two over the next few years.
Yeah, they're definitely that. I think they got a good defense. I think that Vrabel is a decent enough coach, and I think that. You know, you have Corey Davis, who's really come into his own this year. Shout out to Ike for saying he's a waiver wire guy, I believe. And he really hasn't been this year, though. He's above A.J. Brown in pretty much every statistic, and they've both played exactly 10 games. It's kind of interesting. He had the blow up week last week where he scored, 40 points, but he's really come into his own. He's a top five pick in the NFL draft, the real draft. So he's meant to be good. And then you have AJ Brown, who's also should have been a first rounder. So I think that they're poised to be pretty good over the next few years. They have Derrick Henry, which I didn't really even talk about, but I can see them being, a top three ish team, top three, top four team, in the AFC over the next, 5 years. And that's, I would say, on average.
Yeah, I think that's right around where I'm projecting them. I'm still not entirely sold on Ryan Tannehill necessarily being as productive as he's been recently for a really sustainable period. But I guess he is now over the one full year of this kind of threshold there, and after spending so long in Miami, I'm not sure that all of my preconceived notions entering his time as the Tennessee starter were necessarily fair. Vrabel is another person that I could easily see being legit, but I'm not 100% sure it takes a genius to figure out handing the ball to Derrick Henry 30 times is a pretty good decision. Luke, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other on the Titans?
I kind of like the Titans. I mean, they kind of remind me of the old school Patriots a little bit. Maybe it's because Vrabel's their coach.
I mean, they literally are just all former Patriots.
they're just all kind of low-key guys. Like, even Tannehill is just good enough, and he's had a pretty productive year. Like, he's pretty efficient as could be. I'm seeing 26 touchdowns, 5 picks. That's phenomenal. But yeah, handing the ball off to Derrick Henry doesn't take a genius to do that. You're absolutely right. Give that guy the ball. He's a beast. He throws people around like nobody else does. Love watching him play. Pierre was blessed to get to watch him play all year long on his fantasy team. But I like the Titans, I guess I'm saying. I didn't even have a single one all year, which bums me out. I'm scrolling through their roster here. I like the way that they're doing it. It would be cool if they were able to make a run.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm just saying this because I'm so nervous about the playoff match that I'm in this week, where the way it works in our league is Matt and Isaac got byes into the second round, and then the other four teams that made the playoffs all are playing each other, and whoever emerges as the two highest scorers will go on to face Matt and Isaac next week in another what we call Royal Rumble, where the two highest scorers will then play in the finals in week 16. And Pierre is in this Rumble with me this weekend, and he has the Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry double dip. And I just cannot shake the mental image of it's the fourth quarter, there are 6 minutes left in the game, the Titans are up 39-6, and they're panning over on the sideline to Derrick Henry with his helmet off, like gasping for breath after he just broke off another meaningless 70-yard touchdown and now has 184 yards and either two or three touchdowns at this point, and that I cannot get that out of my mind. I'm just so bracing myself for that sort of stat line that I will be on the record saying I like the Titans even giving that many points here this week. The Jags, I don't even know what to say about Jacksonville at this point. I don't know what the long-term plan is there. I doubt it's Mike Glennon. At this point, I doubt it's necessarily even Gardner Minshew. Vanna, what do you feel like is happening or is going to be happening in Jacksonville soon?
I think that Jacksonville is they're legit tanking. They're keeping, like, Minshew, while he is not good, is better than Jake Luton, Mike Glennon. Like, these guys are just like legit bad players. I think that they're just kind of they're tanking to get a draft pick. I don't know where they are in the standings per se overall, but yeah, they're 1-11. They're gonna get Justin Fields at number two, and just hope for the best there, I think, which is the quarterback out of Ohio State. I meant to say something real quick after Luke said they remind him of the old school Patriots, the Titans. That brings up a good point, and I wanted to get back to it when we were talking about does Mahomes have outs to be the greatest ever. Well, I am a massive Brady fan, a massive Patriots fan. A little cap tip to Belichick there, that the Patriots won three Super Bowls before anybody realized that sort of Brady was good. He was enough to get it done, but he was really like, you know, 25 to 28 touchdowns and 12 to 14 picks a year. He really blew up in that 2007 season when they got Randy Moss. Obviously prior to that, he was decent. He was a above average quarterback in the league. That knew how to win, quote unquote. How much you want to give to that, I don't know. But Tannehill's doing enough to get it done. He's not turning the ball over. He makes big plays in big spots. I think it does resemble the early 2000s Patriots.
Yeah, I don't hate that comparison at all. And obviously, Mike Vrabel makes it pretty easy to draw some connections there. And they have been just like called, you know, Patriots Southeast, given that, you know, Deion Lewis went through there for a little while. Many others have gone from New England to Tennessee there. And this is the first game that we've talked about where maybe it's me just emotionally hedging against the idea of Pierre blowing up. But I do feel like Tennessee this time of year, I will give the 7.5 points there. So moving on, Cowboys on the road, giving 3.5 points, if you can believe it, at the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know that there's even anything to discuss as far as what's going to go on in this game. Very little is going to matter here in terms of the long-term future of either of these franchises. But Luke, what did you think of Joe Burrow year one?
It was exciting to watch. I like seeing just 3-9 versus 2-9-1. I would love a tie. I want a team to have two ties. So, what do I think of Joe Burrow, though? Joe Burrow looked like he was just loving throwing the ball, kind of like Drew Bledsoe a little bit. Not to make all these old school comparisons, but he just loved chucking the ball. And so it was fun to watch them just, you know, do that. I mean, they didn't have very much success, but more than they did last year. Or what was their record last year? I don't know. They did horribly.
Bengals went 1-15, I think.
Okay, so they're better than last year.
Maybe 2-14. Actually, I think they went 0-14 and then won their last two games. Maybe that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. They've been exciting to watch this year. I got to give it to them, even being 2-9-1.
And Vanna, is Burrow the future?
Yeah, I think Burrow is better than Herbert. He's obviously not better than him for fantasy purposes yet, because Herbert. I think variance has been on Herbert's side a little bit more than Burrow's per se, and he's got better players around him. But I think that I listen to PFF a lot, Pro Football Focus, and they were saying that how you can really start to tell a quarterback is good when he's hitting his intermediate routes, because the deep ball routes are such high variance that you can't really tell when there's a small sample size if he's actually making really good throws or if they're just getting essentially lucky. But there's a lot more throws in that intermediate area. And they said that Burrow's metrics are just kind of crushing Herbert's at this point in that intermediate area. So, yeah, I think Burrow is legit. I would say that in a redraft, he's definitely number one again for rookie quarterbacks. So, yeah, I do like where they're going with him. The one thing I did want to say about the Cowboys-Bengals game is that should be highlighted is Michael Gallup resurgence. The man that was – how much did you pay in waiver wire dollars for him, Lucas?
I paid $5 for him.
He is back. I think he's going to have a big week this week.
Well, I almost picked him up. I almost snagged him instead of Hollywood, honestly.
Yeah. So I think
a moment where I just thought about it. He looks good.
Yeah,
you don't have to tell me about Michael Gallup, man. I've been on the Michael Gallup. I've been the galloping ghost over here.
You sold him to me.
Yeah, I did.
I like watching him too. He's beastly out there every now and then.
He's great. Yeah. He looks really. I mean, man, is it tilting that PI call in? I think it was week one or week two. Like his whole season would look different if that flag didn't get thrown. As far as I'm concerned, Dak never would have been hurt. The Cowboys would be running away with the division.
You might be right.
No, I definitely am a big Gallup guy there. And yeah, to quickly go back to the Burrow thing, the Bengals, I have to imagine, entered this season with nothing in the way of expectations, and the only thing that mattered is, does it look like Joe Burrow is going to pan out or does it not? And I would imagine that including the like mid-2000s or whatever, when Carson Palmer and then going on to the Andy Dalton era in the early 2010s would get them into the playoffs where they would usually lose in the first round. I suspect that a on paper terrible season this year may have been the most promising Bengals season for Bengals fans in potentially like decades.
Yeah, no doubt. For sure.
All right. So let's go over then to Cardinals, also on the road, giving points here, giving 3 points at the New York Giants. I am really interested to see how this NFC East situation all plays out. The Giants currently in first place here, I believe, at 5-7. Vinny, do you have a winner pick there for the NFC East?
After Antonio Gibson got hurt, I think it's going to be the Giants. I know that they won after Gibson played, I think, two snaps against the Steelers. They beat the 11-0 Steelers, which doesn't make me feel very great about my 25-1 bet, but neither here nor there. I think that's the Giants. The Giants are playing well right now. They got a defense that's playing really well, as you probably know from last week. Not to rub salt in the wound there, but and I think that they're going to they're potentially going to beat up on the Cardinals this weekend.
Wow. Okay. So you like the Giants at home getting points? It sounds like.
Yep. I do.
Yeah. It is fascinating that they entered the season presumably with a lot of their expectations on both Daniel Jones and primarily Saquon Barkley. Neither of them has recently been in the mix, and now they're on the top of their division, which is pretty crazy. But Luke, you were unfortunate enough to be the person who wound up with Saquon when he went out early. Are you still a Saquon fan, or are you going to be potentially avoiding similar situations in the future?
I'm still a Saquon fan, but I think he'll go for cheap. I think I'll probably get him next year.
I was going to say, are you going to double down?
I mean, I don't think he'll go for 70. I think people are going to be really not believers in him. So I'll justify it through saying, like, I'll get him for, like, 32 next year. So,
okay. And
but I'm not as much of a believer in this Giants team as you guys are. But
what do you think? Do you have a pick for the NFC East?
I'm scanning through as you guys are talking, so I'm more on board with this Washington football team than I am with the Giants based off of who they got left in the season and just having the same record. And, Giants got to play the Cardinals, the Browns, and the Ravens. We got Washington playing the 49ers, the Seahawks, and the Panthers. They could win two of those three games. New York is – Giants don't look good in any of their three matchups, honestly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They got my Browns week 15. That's a tough – I love my Browns. They can't beat them. They can't beat them.
Yeah. It is definitely going to be – I suspect – I shouldn't say definitely, but it seems like at this point none of the teams in the NFC East are going to probably be running away with it. So it could definitely come down to at least a situation where – we're in week 17 and it's just a race to get to 7 wins or something like that.
If six and 10 gets in, that's just, oh my God.
Is that something, Luke, that you would like fundamentally object to?
I mean, I do. Yeah, I do, but it is what it is. So it would just be funny. I'm rooting for that to happen just because that would be a statistical anomaly and I love when it happens. But yeah, I do fundamentally kind of object to the idea that that happens. It's not right. It's not just, but it would just let's root for it.
Do you think that in our league, the fact that the two best teams happen to both be in the same division means that one of them should get screwed over and not get a bye?
I think that with two divisions, it's different. With two divisions, it's not the same as having four. With four divisions, types of things like this can happen.
Okay.
With two divisions, yeah, you might get a first round bye situation that happens, but 6 and 10 should never make the playoffs. And the fact that there is a sweat for that to maybe happen is just kind
of, I will absolutely grant that that is a completely different situation. But just wanted to throw out,
you did perhaps... get screwed. I like it. Cause you're the one that has to deal with it. So
no,
you,
I mean, I truly am not that worked up about it at all. I totally understand.
You should be. It's literally hundreds of dollars of equity.
Well, whatever. But Vanna, I wanted to ask if you feel that good about a Giants team that certainly has been playing better than they were early on, but I would extrapolate, and certainly correct me if this is not the case, but you are not a believer in the Cardinals.
I am not, no. Not a believer, or not yet, anyways. I'll still leave it. I'm not shutting the door on them. But I'm not a massive believer in Kyler. I think that he's a great fantasy quarterback. I think that's completely overblown to the fact of where he is as a real-life quarterback. I think he's a worse version of Russell Wilson. And I say that, I guess, as kindly as I can. But I think that Russ and him are compared in fantasy, sort of tries to melt over into real football, and it just doesn't really translate. Where I think that Patrick is and now Deshaun are so much better than the both of them that it's really a mockery to even put them in the conversation. I think that Russ and Kyler make kind of terrible decisions on the run, terrible quick decisions. They both take too many sacks, I think. I'm not that big of a believer in them at the moment. I think that they are overrated. If I had to go with an overrated, underrated sort of thing.
Luke, are you a Kyler guy?
I am a big Kyler guy. Yeah. I love watching him run. I love watching his decision making, and I don't agree with really a lot of stuff that Vanna just said, no offense. I 22 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, not to, you know, fixate on that, on those two numbers that much, but those are two important things to look at, you know, touchdown to interception ratio. You know, he's an efficient runner. I love everything about his game. I think that they're having a tough little stretch right now. They're on a 3-game skid, I believe, maybe 2-game skid. I don't know. 3-game skid. Yeah. So, you know, they feel feisty enough where they could just turn it around and figure it out. So I love watching him and Larry and DeAndre.
They got the Giants this week. They have the Eagles, Niners, and Rams to close out their schedule. So, yeah, I mean, some divisional games. But if they can, I mean, they're certainly winnable matchups here down the stretch. I may have said this actually on one of the earlier podcasts, but I can't shake the notion not only about Cliff Kingsbury, but another guy who was also – I believe, a rookie head coach the same year as him last year, Matt LaFleur with the Packers. I'm definitely not saying they're bad. I just remain unconvinced that either of them is necessarily all that they have been cracked up to be. Vanna, do you have a strong opinion on Cliff Kingsbury? Is it just too soon to tell?
I think it's sort of too soon to tell as well. I don't think that he's any sort of coaching genius. And I think I feel like people have cooled off a little bit with it as well, where every new young coach that looked like he was under the age of 40 was automatically deemed a genius a few years ago, it seemed like, in the NFL. We all got caught up in Sean McVay being a genius because he's got sort of a weird photographic memory, but really doesn't know what he's doing as a football coach.
Wow.
The only Sean McVay's a face.
Yeah,
star,
that's harsh. Dude.
Yeah. But outside of Belichick and Kyle Shanahan, I don't know if there's anybody in the league that I kind of really tip my cap to as like this guy is always making the correct decision.
I would. I am certainly open to this being quickly met with some very accurate and well-researched counterpoints. I feel like Mike Tomlin is constantly undervalued as a head coach, but not necessarily from a football decision-making perspective.
Mike Tomlin is one of those guys where I wonder what Mike Tomlin's reputation would be without ever having known Bill Belichick.
Because, so you think he's stealing IP here, or what's going on?
I just think Mike Tomlin is, I don't know if he hasn't won a game versus the Patriots in a really, really long time. Like, they have absolutely.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Were it not for Bill Belichick, he would have
were
a much.
Not,
I gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that he gets some flack, maybe rightfully so, because he can't really beat Belichick. But without Belichick ever in the picture, I think we're talking about a completely different viewpoint of the general public or everybody as a whole on Mike Tomlin.
I thought you were suggesting that he, like, figured out what Belichick was doing that was working and was just, like, ripping it off.
No.
Yeah, okay. I may be totally wrong on that, but it seems like whatever year this is for him, he's certainly well into the mid-double-digit, I guess not mid-double-digits compared to triple-digits, but, you know, in the mid-teens of seasons here without ever having a losing season. Granted, he's had Ben, I believe, every single year other than when he's hurt, and had plenty of talent surrounding him on both sides of the ball there, but that is a very, very hard thing to do, and especially knowing what we kind of appear to know in December 2020 about Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and some of the bigger personalities with which he's had to contend over the years and kind of keeping a locker room together. Mike Tomlin would be someone for me that I would at least be tipping my cap to, as you put it, for Bill and Shanahan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah, you kind of do have to look at how AB acted after he left the Steelers, and I guess there's not really much to say about Le'Veon, but he kind of acted that way while he was with the Steelers. So trying to keep everybody intact while you kind of have Le'Veon not playing and you're playing his backup is probably a tough thing to do, I would say.
One other name that is perhaps worth throwing into the hat tip conversation. How about Andy Reid?
Oof.
I love Andy Reid.
Luke, yeah, go for it.
I love him. I think he's awesome. I think he's hilarious. You know?
He's on the stop. Okay. All right.
He's a fun guy.
I would love to play for Andy Reid. That's not how you guys answer it. We want to answer it as just fans, not as an imagination.
No, I mean as like a person who is capable of drawing up offensive plays that just it appears are impossible to contend with. Vanna, it sounds like that in your mind may more be a virtue of just having Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and so forth.
He was able to do it prior to them. But I think that as a coach as a whole, I think that Andy Reid's on a tier below Shanahan and Belichick. Things look a lot easier as a coach when you do have Pat. But then again, he was decent when he had Alex Smith as well. So I don't know if
I mean, maybe to say nothing of going to four straight NFC championship games with the Eagles.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, maybe legendary. He deserves a little bit more credit, but I think that's where I'd have him below those guys.
Yeah. Okay. And so I'm sure there are many other names that are worth considering tipping one's cap to, but I don't know that even Shanahan is necessarily on the same level as Bill. I think that's probably a pretty hard argument to make, although I definitely do agree that out of the next kind of generation, he seems the most promising at this point, which is extraordinarily frustrating from a fantasy perspective, because that guy works in some running backs. Like, he is impossible to use any of his players at that position, which is a vital one from a fantasy point of view. So that could be very annoying if he's kind of the trendsetter in the future. One guy who will certainly not be the trendsetter in the future of NFL head coaching, Bill O'Brien, who, Vanna, actually, I believe it was you who presented the group with this stat recently. Since Bill O'Brien was fired in whatever it was, week 4 or 5, 6, somewhere in there, Deshaun Watson is QB1 in fantasy football. I am facing Deshaun Watson as he is on Wink's team at this Royal Rumble in the coming week. Vanna, the Texans are giving 2 here, only 2, as far as I would potentially be concerned, at the Chicago Bears. How nervous should I be about a Deshaun Watson blow-up game?
I don't think it's going to be a blow-up game. I think he'll do just fine. I think he'll have in our league for Wink somewhere between, you know, 26 and 30 points, which isn't really, I don't think, really a blow-up game for him. I feel like the Bears do a pretty good job of containing offenses. They play a lot of zone, so it's a lot of over-the-top stuff that they kind of try to keep corralled. But yeah, QB1 since Bill O'Brien fired it, and I put that stat in the thread the other day that Deshaun has, prior to Bill O'Brien getting fired, throughout his entire career, had been 28th in the league in quickest to pass, or I guess there's a different way to say it, but I can't think of it right now. Quickest to throw the ball. And since Bill O'Brien's fired, he gets rid of the ball the 5th quickest in the NFL now, which is obviously huge for not taking sacks, for really helping your offensive line. It just helps the offense, like, completely as a whole. That's what, like, Brady and Belichick figured out, I feel like, way before everybody else, that you don't need these really big, extravagant plays. You need to get the ball out of your hands quick, because it sort of alleviates you from all kinds of problems on offense, which then leads to, you know, bigger problems into the grand picture of a football team, where you have to pay all these guys crazy amounts of money, especially offensive linemen these days. And I think that Deshaun doing that is just going to, like, elevate him and elevate the Texans to a new level that they were never going to get to with Bill O'Brien, because of, you know, where the offense was going and what they were trying to do. They traded so many picks for Laremy Tunsil. They were just trying to get the offensive line going, when really Watson just had to get rid of the ball quicker. They needed quicker plays and things like that. So, and they have the guys to do it. It shows now. But yeah, I mean, the guy is just kind of a disgrace.
I feel like the fact that all of this is happening under Romeo Crennel, I mean, obviously credit where it's due to a guy who's had a long and successful, for the most part, at least intermittently, career in the NFL. But I feel like the Texans succeeding as soon as they just let go of the guy who thought he knew better and started going with the guy who just, you guys do whatever you want. Deshaun, you be the offensive coordinator. I feel like that's a huge win for the arguments I've been trying to make for a long time.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, so I'm hoping personally that Brandon Cooks, if Deshaun is going to go off, can be on the receiving end of a lot of that, which, with Will Fuller now out the game for – I can't believe it. Not an injury related reason.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Poor guy.
I feel like Cooks.
Poor
could be...
guy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. I feel for him, but he got caught popping PEDs, right?
Yeah.
We can't poor guy him, right?
Yeah, I know. I guess we can't. The other side of that is that, yeah, no. I mean, they say they didn't know. They knew. I'm not.
He said he didn't know.
I was going to, but I'm not. No, he knew. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right, so I feel good. The Texans, along with the Vikings earlier, the Texans are another bet that I would be legitimately interested in making if I needed some reason to be sweating, some additional reason to be sweating red zone on Sunday, giving 2 points at the Bears there. Broncos at Panthers. Panthers a home favorite here, giving 3.5. Luke, I wanted to ask you about life with Teddy Bridgewater this season.
I loved having Teddy Bridgewater. I loved having him as a fantasy QB, but also seemed to be a great real life QB too. I mean, you wanted him bad from me. I remember getting offer after offer for it from you, right?
That is confirmed, and I was forced to go with my second choice of Justin Herbert.
Well,
thanks a lot, man.
But Herbert's trending down right now. So, no, I loved watching Teddy Bridgewater. He's like I really liked him as a Viking too. So he's been like a fun story to watch. He's hard to root against. He's easy to root for. Teddy Two Gloves, baby.
Yeah, he was doing very well. Is he someone, Vanny, you see being a starter for the foreseeable future in the NFL?
Yeah, I hope so as well. I think he's decent enough to get the job done. I think that they can be. You know, they're not going to be favorites to ever win a Super Bowl or anything like that, but I don't think Teddy's going to hold them back from that. I think he's good enough there. And I think everybody is really a fan of Teddy. Just being able to come back from what he's come back from and how he kind of plays the game. He's still sort of – he's conservative enough, but when he's – when the game's on the line, he actually does get pretty reckless and pretty crazy, which is like fun to watch. I think it's the time to be reckless and crazy. He's smart enough to know that it's not just like a second quarter rollout where he just like gets crazy and gets popped. It's like the last play of the game. If he needs to do a flip and try to get into an end zone like that way and risk his body, like he's going to do it. And that's like pretty cool thing to root for, I think.
Yeah. I think he may be like low key one of the more popular players in the NFL, not meaning like there are tons of Teddy Bridgewater fans out there, but the people who kind of know of Teddy Bridgewater in passing, I think generally tend to have a pretty favorable opinion. I mean, he had a really fun run last year with New Orleans, probably played a pretty big role in that, and now being at least fairly productive, to say the least, here in Carolina. I think he could be one of the guys a lot of people are, even without fully recognizing it, kind of rooting for to stay in the league for a while there. Do we have anything on the Broncos at this point, Vanna? Do you feel like they have the QB of their future on their roster right now?
Oh, I hope not. I'm not a Drew Lock fan. I hope he figures it out. They have really good wide receiver core though. Tim Patrick, who was a Baltimore Raven at one point. I just found that out on Twitter today. They have Tim Patrick. They have Jerry Jeudy, who I think is the best rookie wide receiver in the league. He's better than Justin Jefferson. And they have Cortland Sutton, who's going to come back. They got Noah Fant. They got to get the running back situation figured out, but that's relatively easy to do in the NFL, I think. Or they can just get Melvin Gordon out of there and give them
I was going to say, just get rid of like, Melvin Gordon.
That would suffice. But yeah, other than that, I think that they're, they just need a QB. I don't think Drew Lock is the answer there. I think that's where I am with them. I don't see it happening anytime soon. Good's the enemy of great, but I think that, you know, they're kind of stuck in this limbo again.
Do you feel like Elway is just barking up the wrong tree?
I don't know.
Meaning, you know, like, he takes a lot of flack for just constantly taking tall guys who look good throwing the ball.
Yeah. I think that's, yeah. Yeah, he's, it's been, I don't know if it's been proven yet, but, like, size really doesn't matter. You have Breeze that's good there. You have Kyler, Russ, all of those guys are good enough and are proving that theory sort of wrong.
Yeah, I think it was – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, he even had Flacco in there for a year. Like, a lot of people are going to forget that, I think, over a while. But
Flacco was Osweiler, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch.
Like, there have been a lot of guys run through that team, and they are all very bad. Kendall Hilton.
I don't know how intentional that one was. But, yeah, I think it was Drew McGarry, who I saw, like, on Twitter say – I kind of hate that Justin Herbert is now going to cause so many more general managers to keep drafting these tall guys who just look good throwing the football.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just on the Hinton thing, Hinton, however you say it, I was watching the Broncos game. They must have been in prime time or something like that last week, or they were, I can't even remember when, but they gave that dude a press box to himself. Which was, I thought was nice. Like, I mean, you throw him out there to the Saints defense, who's playing as one of the best defenses in the league right now, and you're like, here's one day to prepare to be a quarterback of an NFL team. Good luck. Like, after, like, he's been made a mockery as well because they've already inquired with the league if they can have a coach play quarterback. And then the league's like, no. And they're like, all right, I guess we can go with this guy. Like, he knows that they inquired about the coach. Like, he knows he's he was the second option behind an assistant coach. Like, and they're like, those guys should be doing anything they can for that guy. Like, he was just like thrown to the absolute wolves.
Yeah. I think, I hope at least, although maybe this hope is misplaced, that a lot of NFL fans understand the context there, that this guy has never intended to play quarterback in the NFL. And it was only a completely unprecedented situation where every active quarterback on their roster was banned from playing due to COVID, that he got brought up from the practice squad and forced to start an NFL game. But I would guess that anyone whose opinion is worth taking seriously understands that giving that guy a bit of leeway is in order there compared to, I would say, almost literally anyone else who has ever played quarterback in the NFL. I think that's got to be one of the most glaring exceptions in history there.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move over to the 4 o'clock slate here. Matchup, I'm guessing most people are going to have their eye on Colts -3 at Raiders here. First of all, you guys are both out of the playoffs and can potentially give me some help here. I don't mean that in the underhanded manner that it certainly came across in.
But, yes, you did. Dude. Yes, you did. Yes, you absolutely did. No way.
I know
anyway,
that
ask
I'm,
your question.
Sorry. I know that I'm going to be starting one of Jonathan Taylor or Nyheim Hines. I don't know how I'm going to talk myself out of it being Jonathan Taylor after last week. At the same time, I know I'm going to get it wrong, and that makes me want to start now Nyheim Hines to kind of get in front of me getting it wrong, like the George Costanza kind of do the opposite method.
Yeah.
Man, you want to give me some advice?
I say you start them both, man.
I could. Hey, I mean, it looks like Jamison Crowder might not play, and if anyone else has anything,
surprise,
up, they might
Jamison
both
Crowder
be in there.
Doesn't play, huh?
Luke doesn't like that guy.
I traded him. Yeah.
Oh. I don't know, man. Jonathan Taylor. So the fantasy stuff is where I can kind of get into, but he has a good week last week, but he doesn't even play 50% of the snaps. So he's doing really well. I have him on another team as well. So I'm right there with you that like, he wasn't doing that great. He had a touchdown, I believe. But wasn't doing that great throughout the whole game. And then I think it was the last drive. He ran off like a 24 and a 23 yard run back to back plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know where to really go with him in terms of if it's him or Nyheim Hines. I think it's got to be him, though.
I've been rolling with Nyheim Hines these last couple of weeks, and it's certainly been fine. It just seems like Jordan Wilkins, the third guy, is getting virtually nothing these days, and I am a bit nervous about Nyheim Hines getting just some flat-out goal-line carries, not only the last few weeks, but like over the course of the season. But it seems like they've spent most of their time just wanting it to be Jonathan Taylor and waiting for him to get hot. And I think with the Royal Rumble format, I want to go for the upside of the guy who might fall into the end zone twice if they can get there.
Yeah. I think that so another justification I have for it is that, you know, they're favorites. So if their favorites are not playing from behind, really, they're going to be going with Jonathan Taylor there.
Yeah.
Another part of it, if the game slows down, I think it gets to Jonathan Taylor as well. Interesting tidbit here on one of the websites I follow that tracks books. 70% of the bets this weekend are on the over of 52.5. So the public is 70% on the over, meaning Vegas is usually trying to stay on the contrarian side of that, keeping the public all together. I think it could really get into a lower scoring game where it's a lot slower pace than the 52.5 that Vegas makes it out to be.
Why is Vegas wanting the public to all be on one side?
Because they know they have an edge against the public.
Okay. I mean, I have always thought of it as you know you have an edge if you just split the public 50-50. It doesn't matter what happens, you win.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I can't get into it too much because I'm sure there are people listening that are smarter than I am that would just shake their head at what I'm saying. But, the Vegas has an edge in some spots, and we'll push the public on one side or the other. There are people that can move lines, but like a Floyd Mayweather, whether he bets $1 million or $1,000, he's not moving a line either way because they know they have an edge against a guy like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So are you of the opinion that the Colts are worthy of the 3 points they're giving on the road at the Raiders with the Raiders offense firing as it has recently?
Yeah. I think that the Colts are, they're worthy of the three or the 2.5, wherever it's going to close out.
Yeah, I these are the lines on scoresandodds.com as of, I'm going to say, 5 p.m. on whatever today is, Friday. So, yeah. Luke, historically, I feel like you've been a Raiders guy. Was it just your one infatuation with Darren McFadden that kind of led you down that path, or is there something about the silver and black that really draws you in?
I don't know. It's a really good question. I mean, with McFadden, I love those names with the like uppercase, then the lowercase C, and then the uppercase F. So something about his name spoke to me. So, and I also thought he was a good running back then. But I loved Waller this year. Like I tried to get Darren Waller all year long, and I finally got him. And I got to watch that performance last week as my final sayonara to the fantasy football season. But I don't think I'm like a diehard Raiders fan or anything, but something about their style I like. So
yeah, well, you know, let's get into
it. And I've started like Derek Carr a bunch of times too. So, you know, they sometimes have some exciting games.
Everyone started Derek Carr a few times in our two quarterback league with 10 teams. We've all played the Derek Carr roulette game many times over the last 7 years or whatever it's been.
And I kind of like Gruden. You're the Gruden hater, right?
Okay, so I first of all think Gruden is great to have as a head coach in the league, just like as a character. I think that the Gruden persona is going to prove wrong in the eyes of history in terms of wanting to coach your team to just muscle down and outwork the other. Like this is a game that is going to decidedly be won through mathematics and scheming and things of that nature in the future.
I think that's going to guide people to be good at betting on it, but to play in it, I think he's not as like anti-math as people make him out to be, and he probably doesn't care about that. So
yeah, well, I wanted to ask about the Waller performance in particular, because I set this up at the top of the show and I have left it unresolved. I was going to leave it for the end, but now let's pay it off early here.
Okay.
You watched Darren Waller go off for, in our league, scoring like 50 something points this week.
58.00.
Yeah. 200 yards on the dot. Right.
Loved every moment
for that extra 5-point bonus.
Yeah. To get me that ninth place finish and Vanna the helmet.
That is right. So in our league, the 10th place finisher in the regular season does the following year's draft wearing like a 1980s football helmet with the word loser printed on the front in like old school stickers. And it's a lot of fun every year. And Luke and Vanna, you two were the ones sweating it out this week. One of the two of you was guaranteed to be rocking the loser helmet next season. And Luke, mostly by virtue of Darren Waller, although you did have a good week elsewhere to, you know, give credit where it's due, you were able to pull out on top there. And Vanna, for the first time in history, you are going to be rocking the loser helmet. And before I even get into your reaction here, for the people who did miss the earlier podcast that we did, we keep very detailed records of all of our stats throughout the 10 or so years that we've been playing together. And by virtually every statistically significant metric, as far as I would be concerned, Vanna entering this season was more or less the runaway number one most dominant player. You are now finding yourself here, Derek, in last place. How does this feel?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I am only in last place because Lucas was allowed to free roll at quarterback this weekend. I'm just kidding, Lucas.
Oh, man.
It doesn't feel great to be in last place. It kind of... I don't know if it's really sunken in yet. It was one of those things, just for as a backstory to people listening that don't follow the league. I wasn't in last place all year long. I ended up being in 10th the last week of the season. So it's still very fresh to me to be realizing that I'm going to have to wear this helmet the next year. It wasn't something that I had been preparing for. I was ahead of Luke. We play two wins per week, one for finishing in the top 50% of the league, the other one against your matchup. I was one game ahead of Lucas and a ton of points ahead of him. So
no.
I still did. Yeah, I was.
No.
Yeah.
You beat me by 16 points overall in this season, man.
Right, because you scored over 200 this week, and I scored about like 140.
True, I sat
so
on
I was
this
like,
week.
Yeah, I was like 90 ahead of you, which is a lot.
Yeah, all right.
I really wasn't prepared for to do the honors as the loser helmet, but
you're still not, man. I can tell.
Yeah, no, I don't really know what to say. I'm rattled, man.
I love it on the air. Be true. I appreciate it. You are rattled. It's all good. I've worn the helmet twice before, you know.
Yeah, Lucas, I will let you speak on behalf of the rest of the group here. How does it feel to see Vanna finish in last place?
It's 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 feeling. I mean, I was staring the helmet dead in the eyes, and I just didn't blink. And I just knew that everything had to happen the way that it did. And, you know, it would have been such icing on the cake to win the week, too. But I came in second on the week, so it makes it look – makes my numbers look a little bit better overall, but because they need all the help they can get, man. Making all these stats has made me kind of reflect on these years where it's like, why am I doing this, man? I have the all-time leader in losses. I have just I'm bottom of a lot of categories, but it's motivated me to do better.
Well,
but
that's what I was going to say is what stats have stood out to you, and has this sparked the motivation to turn things around so that you're – future stats improve?
I don't know if it's about my own stats or just exposing others as frauds. Like, you know, you're the host of the show. You're a great guy. I appreciate you. But, man, Have these exposed your head-to-head wins versus your top five, bottom five wins?
Exposed what? I would love to find out what I'm doing that's fraudulent.
It's basically like finding X-ray vision goggles and staring at you, being like, holy, like you have had a gravy schedule as far as, you know, just head-to-head wins go. You're 68-49 career with head-to-head wins versus head-to-head losses, and you're 61-56 with top five, bottom five. So you're running the most above those two, you know, columns out of anybody. So,
oh, I feel really bad about that as the guy who is constantly trying to plead with you guys to eliminate that.
No, man, we need variance. We need to deal with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are right. There would be no variance in football without head-to-head matchups. And I'm not even asking to eliminate head-to-head matchups. I think it should just be weighted top five, bottom five is the solution in the future of fantasy football. But we'll get there.
I think we should use – yeah, we could get – you are right. I mean, it's somewhat progressive, but it's a little bit out of touch with what the people want. It's not what you want. It's what the people want.
No, I know.
It's what keeps the people engaged and what keeps the people motivated to play. So head-to-head wins is massively important for culture's sake.
I completely agree with that.
A guy like Lloyd wants to play against somebody. A guy like Ike wants to play against somebody. A guy like Wink, all of us, we want to be playing against somebody specific as well as playing against the field.
I totally agree with that, and that would not
first three that came to mind.
that would not be removed under the weighted top five, bottom five proposal. I just don't feel bad being the guy benefiting from fifth place being equal to first place. It's the guy constantly trying to flag up that is probably not necessarily the fairest metric.
True. It's true. You have covered your bases pretty well with that narrative.
Yes. So. Okay. Yes. Looking very much forward to next year at our annual retreat, men's fantasy getaway, where we get together and do our draft and hang out for the weekend, and seeing Vanna putting that helmet on, even though...
Yeah, will it fit? Will it fit? Man, have you ever tried it on as a joke?
I have not.
Man.
Do you remember, though, that I do have a very big head?
I know. That's why I'm asking.
All right. I didn't know if there was some... Does it not fit everybody? Yes, but I don't know if it'll fit.
You might have to rub, you know, grease up the sides of your head or the helmet.
Should I, as backup, bring another helmet?
No, you got to fit into it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's gonna fit.
Well, we'll have to. It'll maybe fit on the top. It'll be resting on the top.
The head is 7 7/8. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. 7.
You
and
can kind of stretch this thing out, so it'll like be really tight on the temples.
So yeah. Vanna, I wear a 7 3/4, and it does not fit me. So enjoy.
Love it, dude. Love it. Shouldn't have had such a crappy year, man.
Yeah,
and let me state for the record, I only know that it doesn't fit me because I've tried it on as a joke. I've never actually had to wear the helmet.
True. Will you one day, though, Stoney? When will the first year be that you'll wear the helmet?
I mean, I don't think I've ever even been too close to wearing the helmet. I don't think I've
I'm not asking about with the past. I'm saying in the future. How long will it be until you wear a helmet? Because math says inevitably that you're going to have to wear it one day.
I mean, all of us, if we continue playing long enough, are just through sheer luck.
Right.
Going
so
to
how
wear
long
it.
Until you? How long until you wear it?
I will be surprised if I can go another 10 years without coming in.
That's on the record. That's on the record.
I mean, I'm totally free rolling that. I'm saying
you're,
it's going
no,
to happen
you're getting it next year because you said that. That's on the record.
I don't think you understand like the way that I'm framing this. I'm being underconfident here.
Right. Well, I'm just trying to flip it.
All right. Well, speaking of a team that it seems like a lot of people are confident in here this week, Jets visiting the Seahawks. Seahawks at home giving 13.5 points here in a week where I am going to be needing a lot of game flow for Russell Wilson. I want a close game, so they have to keep throwing it. I do not love the way that line sounds here. Vanna, how do you feel like I should be feeling about Russ entering this week?
I think pretty good.
He's been slowing down.
He has been slowing down. He has. I don't think he's been slowing down. He has slowed down. Like, it's been, what, 6 weeks now that he's been mediocre at best?
In that name, we're getting there, if not there.
He's weather dependent, man. Some of those QBs are. They are, man. Some of them drop the same rate every year. It gets this time of year.
Weather dependent.
And he's you need Baker Mayfield playing in a rainstorm to get any production out of him?
Oh, he is gutsy.
No, I think he should feel good. I think that they're in a get-right spot, and I think that that's what they're going to do just to fill in some nice narratives here. I think that they're going to go on and sort of blow out the Jets here. And I the Jets kind of do try to do a good job of keeping up. Like, they're not trying to slow the game. They're not trying to slow the game down at all. They're trying to make the game as quick as possible, as many plays as possible, it seems like, at most points.
Luke, did you see the end of the last Jets game?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, they don't want to go 0-16, but they might go 0-16.
I mean, it seems like they do want to go 0-16.
Right. Scott Hansen, pretty much had already counted those chickens in that game. I remember there was a moment where he was like, and it appears the Jets will win their first game. And then everything happened. So Scott Hansen counts some chickens less, if he ever becomes a listener.
What part of it appears? Does that not strike? Does that seem conditional to you?
It just appears is supposed to mean something real, not this like weird little premonition. Like, a premonition isn't something that actually is appearing. That's in your head. There were too many outs for the Jets to still lose, as we saw.
I mean, especially if they're trying to lose. Vanna, did you get the vibe that they were trying to let them score?
Dude, come on, man. Nobody's trying to do that. I think that's such a false narrative from fans thinking that that's real. That's just my opinion. But I am strongly, I'm sorry, man. I that might be an unpopular opinion, but I don't believe anyone's actually trying to lose. I think that's a fan conspiracy theory.
Dude, Colin, they're 100% trying to lose, man.
The players themselves, Vanna. You think they're trying to lose?
No.
No way.
I don't think that they're trying to lose. I think that they did. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, does it look like they're trying to lose? Absolutely. Like, did that?
Yeah. It looks like it, but they're not trying to lose, man.
No, I don't.
We all know it.
I think that. Yeah. I don't know. Some of the smarter football people I follow said that cover zero blitz was actually a good play to run there. It didn't work out correctly, and they look like idiots for doing it. But and Greg Williams just shouldn't be in the league anyways. And happy that he got fired because of it. But I don't think they're out there just trying to lose.
I think that's just how an 0-11 team handles that moment. Dude, they just botched it.
Yeah.
It's certainly possible. Yeah. I mean, if I were a Jets fan, I would have been happy. That's all I'm going to say is I want Trevor Lawrence if he's willing to play.
Quickly after you chuck whatever you're holding in your hand, you might find a way to be happy. But they were trying to win. Nobody's trying to go 0-16. They had a chance to win a game.
Yeah, I certainly don't mean to suggest that all of them are out there trying to take. I am positive that many people on the field and within the organization were hoping to win. And I am also positive that many were not. So who knows where the majority of the opinion lies there, but certainly looked a bit weird to the naked eye. But 13.5 is a lot of points. That being said, I feel like the Seahawks are very much looking for a statement week where they can just light someone up. They're at home. It's the Jets. I could see this being a much, much bigger blowout, frankly, than 13.5. Although, as soon as I've now said that on the record, the Jets are just going to win outright.
Seahawks. You're making me want to take that money line for the Jets right now, man.
I wonder what it is. Actually, let me. I'll pull that up.
I've been scrolling through. Of course, I just freaking took away from it, but money line is. Okay, yeah. Plus 525.
Yeah, I don't even love offering you that, taking the Seahawks
side. I just threw it down on Bovada. I put $10 on Bovada for good faith, just because I'm talking about it, and I have 10 to spare. I just did it, so
all right,
10 to
well,
win 50.
We don't give free promotion on this podcast, so Bovada owes us money now.
They owe me money. They can put it right in my account.
All right. So I am desperately rooting for game flow here to keep Russ throwing the ball. But Derek, are the Seahawks just falling apart? And do you feel like Russ may go yet another season without an MVP vote?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that. It seems like they're falling apart. It seems like they could be falling apart, and I think that a few teams in their division are getting better. The 49ers are getting better. They're getting healthier. I don't know if they still have enough to make a run, especially in the NFC, but and then the Rams. I think the Rams are a really scary team at this point. So even with their fraudulent coach. Yeah, they have the two best players on defense on their team in the league. So it's pretty hard to mess that up.
And they got Robert Woods, man.
They do have Robert Woods.
I love Robert Woods.
He's a great fantasy player. He's a great real life player.
Oh, hidden value. He's a better out of the roof, yeah, dude. Yes, Robert exactly. Robert Woods is I would love to have Robert Woods on my team.
Exactly.
I great very block. Much hate you guys, just for the record. just in case anyone has not picked up on it, Robert Woods is on my team and last night put up 8 points in my crucial Week 14 matchup, although I do agree that Robert Woods in general is an extremely worthwhile player to roster on your fantasy team.
Yeah, dude, he's a Luke's guy. You have a Luke guy on your team.
Trust me, I was trying to find a way to bait you into taking him for Aaron Jones for a long time.
You fell in love with him too. Don't even lie.
No, I do. I genuinely have. Yeah. Robert Woods has bailed me out.
Yeah, dude, he's awesome. I love watching him play.
Go for it, Luke.
No. Ask. I love hidden value questions.
Is there any hidden value in his 8 points, though?
I mean, I'm sure he had some. Every single opportunity to block, I'm sure he took advantage of.
No, I'm asking Colin in his fantasy. He's still playing fantasy. We're not.
I know, man. I can't.
Is there any hidden value in 8 points?
I mean, I'm hoping that it.
Yeah. If anybody's going to do it, it's Robert Woods.
Well, hidden value. That's not the grasp of hidden value. It's just come on, man. Don't.
Well, listen. Explain to the listening audience what hidden value is.
Hidden value in real life football is honestly like Robert Woods out there blocking every single play. It's the hustle guy. It's the guy that's paycheck doesn't really get affected by the hustle. That's hidden value. It's the value that does not show up on the stat sheet. That is literally what hidden value is.
So Marcus Smart, I feel like, is not a football player, but a basketball player that you have pointed to in the past is like a good example of this.
Yes, my favorite player in the NBA, without a doubt.
Okay. I love the concept of hidden value, even if I don't necessarily agree that it is always all that hidden.
It literally is the value that just does not show up on the stat sheet. That is what it is. So,
but
can you acknowledge that there is value that doesn't show up on the stat sheet?
Of course, but I definitely agree with that. Even beyond things that you do on the field or on the court, like being a good teammate, provides hidden value in certain ways. But the emphasis on hidden value, I feel like, may be where some of the disconnect falls for me, in terms of, like, it's hard to argue that LeBron James has much hidden value when all of his – he has a lot of readily apparent value.
Yeah, but also when you compare how he is compared to how other super, super, superstars are, he does it a little bit better. So, you know, he's the super, super, superstar that does it the best, I think.
Okay.
That brings the best vibe. So that'll be his hidden value.
Okay. So we'll keep tracking hidden value and see when that starts. What's that?
I just laughed at the vibes part. I was just imagining LeBron bringing the vibes. And that's like what
– Well,
I understood what you meant, but it's just like it's a very like Gen Z sort of thing to say that he's just bringing the vibes, man. Like,
he's trying to bring goodness to the world when other superstars are not.
I love. Yeah, for sure. He's a great person outside of it and inside of it, and I think that does go a long way in, you know, people wanting to play with him, people wanting to be around him, things like that. So I agree with the hidden value part. It's just funny that to think of LeBron bringing some vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So. We'll see what becomes of Russell Wilson and the vibes he's bringing to the MVP discussion. One guy I think is probably going to be bringing some vibes to that mix. The Packers -7.5 on the road here at the Detroit Lions. Vanna, where do you feel like Rodgers at this point is stacking up in the MVP conversation?
So he's got to be number two, right? I think he's a good distance behind Mahomes. But I think he is close to there. He's on historic pace too. His touchdown rate to interception rate is, I think, historic pace in the NFL. He's like over 8.2 touchdowns. His touchdown percentage rate is over 8.2. And his interception rate is right around 1, a little bit lower than 1%. So he's on pretty historic pace. I'm a huge Rodgers fan at this point. I think that Rodgers is one of those guys that gets a really bad rap amongst the press, amongst the casual fan, I guess. I mean, there's been some – I don't know what you call them, like if it's kosher to call something a hit piece, but there's been stuff like that on Rodgers in the past where they've like just ripped him as a player with his teammates. Things like that, like you have to be suck up to him to be sort of involved in the offense, all these things. And there's another podcast that Rodgers goes on every single Tuesday, and I watch it pretty religiously, and he doesn't seem at all like that guy. And granted, things are going right now, but things haven't really gone wrong for the Packers and Rodgers. So I don't know if that's just a completely false narrative that he's a bad teammate, or if maybe he was at one point and he's matured, but I'm a big Rodgers guy at this point. I'm excited to see. I think if I had to pick a Super Bowl champion right now, I would pick the Packers.
Oh, wow. Over the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Wow. That's I like it. I like the ambition.
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Luke, I assume you agree that Aaron Rodgers is very good at football, but are you a fan of Aaron Rodgers, the guy?
Not really. I mean, for some reason, his cockiness kind of gets to me a little bit. But I have days where I really like his steez, but no, collectively, I don't really like his vibe. He just seems like kind of like everybody. He tries to make the refs feel stupid.
I get what you're saying there, yeah. And I understand why people
He's a little whiner when it's like, guy, you have – no, you rarely are facing adversity out there. Like, you're acting like, you know. So, I'm just still a Brady fan, and I compare the two a lot, so maybe my opinion is a little biased.
Vanna, how many rings do you feel like if Rodgers had just spent his whole, you know, the last 12 years with Belichick in New England, how many rings do you think he would have?
Oof. The last 12 years?
So let's say he started in that with that 2007 team. I'll give him.
How many rings would he have? Two. I'm not giving him more than Brady.
Okay.
Nice, dude. Nice.
No way. Yeah,
I like
no
that.
Way.
No okay.
Way, man. Yeah, he can have two. He's not. There's a certain.
He would have botched one of them. Yeah.
Winning
a Super Bowl. He wouldn't have come back in that Falcons one.
Yeah, winning a Super Bowl is really, really hard, man. While he's a great player, he's probably more talented than Brady. Yeah, I mean, I did say at the opening of this podcast I didn't care about Brady anymore, but now I'm going down this, like, fest for him. But, like, there is, like, some part of Brady that just, like, it's not coachable. So, yeah, that's where I'll leave it at.
Yeah, okay. Brady's got no ego crazily out there while the game is happening. It seems like he checks his ego at the door. Might have an ego outside of it, but while it's being played, never seems like he's got one.
So another kind of face that's going to be, I guess, actually no longer on the sidelines here, but would have been familiar to Patriots fans if he had done better. We actually just lost Matt Patricia here as the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Vanna, what do you think about just the state of hiring people off the Bill Belichick coaching tree at this point?
I mean, it just doesn't work, or it hasn't worked yet. I guess, like, yeah, no, I'm not about it. I think that there's a whole – I think a lot of these guys, or from what it seems like, a lot of these guys try to go in and really take the Bill Belichick approach right when they get in there, and I just don't think that's how it works. I think Bill Belichick as the – we'll go with Luke's vibes, as the younger kids call it. Belichick has a lot of clout at this point. And there's not really going to be – like, he's got guys like Reggie Wayne saying that it's not fun and just quitting. rather than like making a stir in his locker room. And when you just kind of come in and try to make everything sort of as hard-nosed when it wasn't prior, and these guys are making, you know, multi-millions of dollars a year, it's probably pretty hard to listen to this guy when we're going, you know, 2-14 to be like, no, we're not like, I'm not working 8 times harder than I worked last year to also go 2-14 again.
Right. It seems to me, and I think from what I've seen, this kind of speaks to your point, that Brian Flores in Miami is not trying to go the Bill Belichick route, and that is potentially working very well for him.
Yeah. I mean, you just like maybe at some point he can, but like, I mean, the Bill Belichick route would be a little bit different without Tom Brady as well, right? Like, you have your best player is the best player ever, and he's also equally as crazy as the coach. So, like, while you don't have that guy sort of in the middle as your best player being like, come on, man, we don't need to do this, we don't need to do that. Like, you have two equally as crazy guys, like, holding you equally as crazily accountable. So, yeah, I think that it worked for their system. I don't think it's something that – it's definitely not a recipe for success as we've seen.
Okay, so
– What about with the Titans, though? We were just talking about Mike Vrabel and how it's working for them. Like, you know, how do we explain that whole case?
I don't know. Is Vrabel taking the hard-nosed approach, though?
I get a similar vibe from, you know, him in the Patriot way.
Yeah, personally. I mean – yeah, he might be like a do-your-job sort of guy, but I feel like Patricia sort of went in there and was like, you know, 5 a.m. practices, we're studying film till 10 p.m. at night. He ran out his best cornerback in Darius Slay. It's just like he like tried to make so many moves that like weren't really something that was seen well in the locker room. And like, you know what I mean, like kind of – nobody's going to question Belichick on trading Richard Seymour, you know, 2 years before it's the right time, but they are going to question Matt Patricia. And I just don't think that Vrabel, while he might be like kind of a hard ass coach, hasn't really rocked the boat as much as sort of like the other guys have. And he hasn't really faced adversity in there, right?
He's still part of the Belichick, you know,
tree. Yeah. Though. So is Brian Flores though. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is those two guys are – it's not like we can discount the two guys that are doing well who come from Belichick. So
for sure. There's just been a laundry list of bad ones.
Yeah. It's just we're coming through at two firings of two of them. So it's like it's tough timing. But there are two that are still doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luke, were you a big Matt Patricia guy back when he was with the Patriots?
Yeah. I liked his little pencil in the ear look, I got to say.
Yeah.
backwards hat, like I've seen like 1,000 of him in real life, and I just like that he was able to be, you know, a big coach. So yeah, I liked him.
I mean,
he
literally does look like a drunk casino rat that
absolutely
is calling plays, screaming at the TV, but he's actually out there.
Or I feel like I knew him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's about to go get like a table saw and like chop a 2x4 or something like that.
Yeah, if he needed to, he could.
Yeah, he's like a great carpenter.
Yeah, all right. We'll see what becomes of Matt Patricia, if anything. So we will move over to Falcons giving points on the road. 2 points to the Chargers. My man, Justin Herbert, going to hopefully have a better performance than he did last week. I'm also going to be rolling Mike Williams out there and feeling good about that. Given the Atlanta defense to this point in the season against wide receivers. But, Luke, I wanted to ask you where you stand on Julio Jones at this point. You know, he's been in our league, I believe, since my first season was his first season. 2011, absolutely. He was a rookie. I was a rookie. I had him, and I fell in love.
Your team name was I Heart Julio Jones, man.
It was.
Your first ever year playing.
Yes. And he, as far as I'm concerned, is the one non-quarterback left who has really been like, super high value every single year that we've been playing. It was really down to him and AJ Green until I guess it would have been last year. They were the last two in my mind that at least that immediately came to mind. As far as I would be concerned, Julio has been like the GOAT in our league from positional players. Where do you stand on him after this season as a guy who's been a big Julio fan and a regular Julio rosterer in recent years?
Yeah, I will always try and own Julio. That goes for next year, too. I love watching Julio. He's hard-nosed. Like,
you want him now?
You know,
can we make trades between each other?
No, we probably can't. We're out of the mix.
But no, we can make trades with each other, right?
I'll allow it. Yeah, you guys can trade with each other. Who cares?
No, I won't. It goes against my moral code. I love Julio, though. I love him. I love him. He's got the best hands ever. He's exciting. He had a 300-yard game for me 1 year. Matt Ryan threw for 500. Julio caught for 300. I'll never forget that day. That was just an amazing experience. So, you know, I root for Julio every year. I'll have him next year, too. And... you know, at some point, I'll probably have to trade him at some point, too. I know when I have to trade him out of the you know, us on the podcast here. I had to trade him 1 week when he was on bye, and I had to do it, and I did it. Derek, you decided to keep him on your bench, right? I was able to let go and say goodbye to him. Yeah, I traded him on bye. You kept him on your bench on bye.
Huh. Luke, do you feel like Vanna actively did a bad job this year?
I do. I do. No offense, of course, but you're going to wear the helmet. You did a bad job. It's not that unlucky, right?
Well, I mean, Gabe would be wearing the helmet if we didn't have the top five, bottom five element, and he's got a very good team.
That's Wink you're talking about.
No, it's Gabe.
Oh, other way around. Sorry. Yeah, Wink has had an incredible schedule this year. Sorry. Yeah, Gabe would be. He would. He was 10th on Yahoo's rankings. No, I think Vanna did a bad job as far as – honestly, that move with Julio, I didn't mean to go so hard in the thread and to cause the stir. But, yeah, man, I mean, you can't have value on your bench when you're facing win out. That's just my opinion of it, and that was out of touch with the reality of the situation.
I don't know if it was, and I guess this is kind of fine to talk about it in terms of the league because it is a little bit strategy. But it's a lot different to trade a guy on a bye than it is to trade someone hurt. Especially with a hamstring for the third time.
Yeah, but man, it's like it's just value on the bench. It's like value on your bench is as simple as it gets. Like that way it blends those two situations together. It's like there shouldn't never be value on the bench when you need to win out.
So you don't want your value to be hidden, Luke?
Exactly. You want your value to be all on the table. You want every ounce of value to be in play when you need to win out. You can't afford to have anything sitting on the bench because that goes against the philosophy of trying to stay alive. So that's where my beef with it came from. And, you know, making all the moves I did, getting criticized for it, you know, I said what I said.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand where you're coming from, but I just don't see it as there wasn't enough sort of value there. I don't think I was going to get anything that would have improved my starting lineup any more than it was at. Obviously, you can look at it.
I just think he could have given an upgrade somewhere, you know, at any of those positions. It could have been that person plus Julio for an upgrade. Any of them.
Yeah. I mean, I offered two people in the short window that I had Julio, and both of them responded with, "Is he playing again this season?" So that's why I mean, in terms of, is it if we're starting at that point, then I'm probably not getting value that's going to increase anywhere in my roster.
I feel like I'm expressing what I wanted, which is him plus whoever you started could have been somebody better. So that was my criticism with it. I mean, Colin, I feel like cut me off here if I'm rambling.
No, I mean, I tend to agree with in must-win situations – wanting to, and certainly in like playoff situations, there's very little reason to leave extra equity on your bench if you have an option to viably consolidate it. I think the question in Vanna's spot there largely comes down to what he could get for Julio, and I don't know that was a time where people were really selling out for injury-prone wide receivers.
Any upgrade is better than no upgrade, upgrade at all.
Yeah, so listen to this, though. I have Duke Johnson play on Thursday night. He gets 17
stinks.
Points. So he's locked in at 17 points. The other guys that I have, I'm in a unique spot because I have Ridley, I have DK Metcalf, I have Tyler Lockett. And I have Antonio. And then I have Brian Hill and Miles Sanders, who Miles Sanders, I believe, yeah, he had come back from he played in that like Hurricane game against or he played against Cleveland, and then he played against the Giants. And I had him going against Seattle, who was going to be very bad against the run, so I thought that that was a good matchup. And then Todd Gurley wasn't playing. No one's going to want Brian Hill or Miles Sanders. So who am I trading Julio and Tyler Lockett for? Who am I trading Julio and DK for? Who am I trading Julio and Calvin for? Like, those guys are premier studs. Like, no one's giving me, you know, Tyreek Hill for those two guys. I was in a weird spot.
I would have found a way out of it.
Yeah, but it's not an upgrade to get. So if I trade Tyler Lockett and Julio, that's not an upgrade to get to Diggs. Like, Lockett can be right there with him, especially in a Seattle matchup there where DK.
It was just based on how much you ripped on the Diggs trade, you know, versus what you did, you know. Let's just
And I think I just combated back to it. Yeah, because I had some reasoning there. Like, I needed to. I didn't have another piece to go with him because my other pieces were so bad, and then the other pieces were so good that it was going to be very hard for me to trade him, unless I traded him straight up. And I didn't think that Robbie Anderson, which was the only offer that I got, I did hit up four people asking them if they wanted Julio Jones, and the only offer I got was Robbie Anderson for him. I didn't think that that was an upgrade from Antonio Brown against the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird having a season like this where there were a few non-quarterback, non-wide receiver guys that were putting up so many more points than the rest of the, I guess I'll just say, running backs and tight ends. There were a few kind of like mega studs, really only Travis Kelce at tight end by the end, and then certainly plenty of wide receivers who could put up tons of high-scoring games, but it was never that hard for anyone to plug-and-play people at wide receiver, and when that is the situation, the trade market becomes just, like, totally skewed, and unlike, as far as I was concerned, virtually anything we'd ever really had to deal with before, and I am guessing it was more exaggerated in our league where we start more people than a standard league does, and we have bonuses, so studs are potentially worth more than they are in other leagues. But I suspect a lot of people listening who are in leagues that are generally somewhat active with trading probably went through similar things. Once the at least perceived kind of player values became so skewed in one way or the other on a positional basis, it made the market so abnormal. And I am not overly surprised that trading, at least in our league, ended up slowed, if not necessarily slowing down, at least becoming far more complicated than it had ever been in the past. There were a lot more people talking themselves into, I would say, reasons to go for things that were not necessarily there.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. definitely fair. Yeah, I think that's – yeah, it was tough. It was – I thought I had – because you have Calvin Ridley in a smash spot without Julio, and then you have DK and Lockett. And, yeah, it was just – it was one of those situations where no one was really looking to take on – Julio, because he had his third hamstring injury in this since the beginning of the season, and then I don't really know if I want to trade him with one of the other, you know, top 10 wide receivers in the league. Like, I mean, Lockett hasn't been there recently, but DK and Ridley over the course of the season have been in that top 10 range, and this was, you know, 2 weeks back, right before week 12. So we'd only had 11 weeks of the season had been played when this trade was going down. But, yeah, I didn't know where to go. And then if I was going to trade for a quarterback or something like that to, you know, upgrade my team pretty much anywhere, I was going to have to give up a quarterback. And no one – or, you know, they were going to need a quarterback in return. And no one's going to be taking on Cam or Tua. Like, my team was just bad enough where people were just – and, yeah, people were just letting me pack it in. essentially. It wasn't anyone. I felt that way a little bit.
Like, I was hoping you would just fade into obscurity. I was not trying to help you solidify anything.
Exactly. I don't know if that's like giving myself too much credit there, or like too much of a pat on the back. Like maybe this is where the villain part comes in. But I feel like there was a little bit of that, like, let's let this dude die. Like, let's not give him some life in here. He's got Julio. I'm not trading with him. Like, I'd rather see
Julio. I feel that every year, man. Fine.
What's that?
I just feel that every year, man.
No, yeah, you are correct to feel that way, Luke. You only lose because we target you and you make awesome decisions that should be paying off.
I'm the most unlucky guy in the league history.
Yeah, so Falcons giving 2 points here at the Chargers. The Chargers at home here was actually the final, I think, bet that I felt pretty good about. And maybe, again, this is just optimism and what I need to see happen here. But I'm feeling a big rebound week here for my man, the young lad, Justin Herbert. On the Falcons, though, one final note that I had is I certainly would anticipate 10 years from now, when I'm thinking back on the Falcons of this era, I will primarily be thinking about Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. And it used to feel to me, prior to whatever it was, 2017, 2018, the 28-3 loss, like the Falcons going on that sort of Super Bowl run almost felt overdue for a long time. I do now kind of feel like 10, 15 years from now, I may be saying to myself, I can't actually believe they got lucky enough to get that close in the first place. Vanna, how do you feel like you're going to remember this Falcons team that I feel like has had a pretty memorable kind of core for a long time at this point?
Yeah. They've been good, I think. But it is going to be tough. It's going to be less memorable than it should have. But that 2017 run, like, yeah, the Patriots came back from 28-3, but yeah, and the game is 60 minutes long. I guess you can't take anything away from it, but let's just remember that they went on a pretty epic run there. I don't remember who they played in the divisional round, but in the conference round, or in the NFC championship, they played the Packers and absolutely destroyed them. I remember being at the Patriots-Steelers game. I was at the game watching the Packers Falcons from a tailgate, and they were absolutely working them. I remember in the first half they were up a considerable amount. I don't remember if it was 28 or 30, 35, and then they come out the first almost three quarters of that Patriots Falcons Super Bowl, and they're working the Patriots pretty much every direction that they possibly can. So that could have been a pretty epic run and a pretty historic run for Matt Ryan and Julio. That, you know, it got rewrote in about, 18 minutes? But it's, I guess that's just kind of just the way the cookie crumbles, and it's going to be tough for them to be, you know, sort of that memorable when they couldn't get all the way there.
Yeah, it's weird just because they would stand out to me as one of the more memorable kind of teams that were regularly competitive that I would think back on upon like the last decade or so of football that I've been watching closely. But I don't know that other than that one year, I would think that they got like super unlucky to never come that close again, which I don't know if I would have anticipated this time a few years ago. But regardless, we've spent plenty of time there on the Falcons. We now have the Saints on the road giving 6.5 at the Philadelphia Eagles, and Carson Wentz has been benched. Luke, what do you think, if anything, about the switch away from Carson Wentz, and perhaps more of interest, have you heard from Isaac about what he thinks about the switch away from Carson Wentz?
I haven't heard anything about it from Isaac. I'm at peace with it, I guess, because the Eagles seem to be like a desperate squad who overreact, so makes sense to me. But I don't know. I feel bad for Carson Wentz. He was supposed to be, you know, rookie of the freaking year.
Oh yeah, I mean, he was potentially going to be league MVP his rookie year until he got injured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vanna, is Jalen Hurts for real?
Woof, I don't know. I think he's going to be better than where Carson Wentz is currently, but I don't know if he's going to be any sort of savior for the team. I wonder, you know, deep down at the Eagles' core, if they are regretting giving up Nick Foles. I listened to a podcast with Richard Sherman, who I really respect for his NFL knowledge. Obviously, plays in it, but he's also very knowledgeable about it as well, I think. And he was saying that, you know, there are just some systems in the league that quarterbacks mesh with. And a lot of the times, good quarterbacks aren't dealt too often in the NFL. So it's one of those things where you never see them outside of the system. And if they're doing well, the coach isn't fired either. So you just constantly see that guy in that single system, and they're just clicking on all cylinders, and it just looks like he's a very good player. But at the end of the day, he can really just be built for a system like that, which is where it seems, now that we have hindsight being 2020, it seems like that was, you know, a system that was built for Foles to do really well in. He did really well in that Super Bowl run where they beat the Patriots. And I just wonder if they ever regret sort of giving him up and getting away from him and going back to Carson, because even though Carson did have that, you know, rookie year with where he had an MVP caliber season, other than that, it never really clicked for them with Doug Peterson. It just was like he's been kind of erratic, I would say, the rest of his career outside of that one 12-game run he had.
He also coaches – or is at least more inclined than the average head coach, in my mind, to pursue a style that is probably more prone to variance than most NFL coaches, who tend to, at least historically, be a little more conservative, although that definitely seems to be changing in more recent years. But either way, there's going to be a statue of him outside that stadium in Philly that I've been to twice and can't remember the name of at this moment for the foreseeable future. So at least they've got that going for them there. I feel like the Saints giving 6.5 on the road, I would still be pretty comfortable with. I am a bit nervous about Jalen Hurts potentially coming out and just lighting it up, and that would probably push me away from even wanting to bet on this game in the first place, but it certainly seems like the Saints are playing pretty hot, to say the least, as of recently, and even without Drew Brees. Not a ton of reasons to be concerned as things stand right now. It really just, at this point, seems to me like a matter of how they are eventually going to get screwed over in the NFC Championship game, and who that is against. So that should be really exciting to see play out. Washington at 49ers, 49ers giving 4.5 at home. I don't even know that I care about this game beyond the Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel sweat that I have. I don't know that I've watched virtually anything of either Washington or San Francisco over the course of this season that did not pertain directly to my fantasy team. Luke, have you had any sweats for either of them, or had a reason to care? Do you have Jimmy G for a little while, perhaps?
No, not this year. I haven't had Jimmy G at all. I haven't had any 49ers this year. I tried to get Deebo from Gabe, but he wouldn't give him to me for cheap. And I haven't even really watched a 49ers game all year. That's the kind of what fantasy does to you, is it makes you watch only the games that your guys are playing in.
Okay, so, well, Vanna, can you help me out here a bit? Does either side stand out? Did Niners giving 4.5 at home?
I think it's... Yeah, I like the 49ers giving the points. I think they're kind of getting healthier. They're sort of clicking a little bit more now, it seems like. They got Ayuk and Samuel healthy. They got Mostert, who seems to be relatively healthy. He's got some sort of rolled ankle or something like that right now, but he sounds like he's going to play. Jeff Wilson is playing, you know, fine right now. Richard Sherman's back. I think the 49ers – they might have dug themselves too deep a hole, but they're going to hurt some playoff chances for some teams over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think they may hurt teams' playoff chances. I have counted them out, but perhaps that is me chicken counting, as I am wont to do. My observation on the 49ers over these last couple of weeks, and the same thing has been happening with the Rams as well. I have found myself matched up with I have both Robert Woods on the Rams and Brandon Ayuk on the 49ers, and I've been faced off they're facing off, I guess, against Deebo Samuel and Cooper Kupp. And I would say the sweat of you have one wide receiver on the team and your opponent has a different wide receiver on the team is the best, or at least the most degenerate kind of sweat in fantasy football, where every time the quarterback drops back, it could go really well or really poorly for you. And it's a big adrenaline boost every time. I've become a big fan of the wide receiver on teammate wide receiver sweat. But I don't know how much more there is worth exploring on Washington and Niners at this point. Sunday night, we are going to have the Steelers at the Buffalo Bills. Interestingly here, the Bills opened getting 2.5 points at home. They are now giving 2 points at home as of at least the last time I checked the lines. It may have changed over the course of the recording of this podcast. But Vanna, what are you thinking now as things stand on the Steelers? Again, you have that 25-1 bet at the Bills here this week. What do you think?
Give me the Steelers with the points now. Yeah, they're down to what do you have, Matt, on yours? Is it 2.5?
I have 2.5.
Yeah, so at 2.5, give me those points. I think that the Steelers, I think they can beat the Bills here at Buffalo. Well, I don't think that they're, you know, the powerhouse at 11-1. They might even be a pretty bad 11-1 team in recent memory, but I still do like some of the things they got going there. They've had a few injuries on the defensive end, which kind of sucks. Bud Dupree got hurt last week. But I think that they're still a team that they're going to need to, in the playoffs, you know, win something a little bit more than a coin flip, where they, you know, might be plus 150 dogs. I think, and if they can do that, if they can, it's going to come down to a couple plays, I think, for them. So if they can do that, I think that they'll be, you know, they'll be good moving forward. But against the Bills, give me those 2.5. I think that I'm sticking with the Steelers there. I feel pretty confident about it too.
Okay. Luke, you are a big Stephon Diggs guy. I believe you're a fan of at least watching Josh Allen when he's not playing against the Patriots. what do you think about the state of the Buffalo Bills going forward? I know we talked about the kind of like big picture contenders in the AFC East, but are you viewing this particularly Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs connection as a thing you're going to have to be worried about for many years to come now?
I don't know. I love that dip though. I mean, I had that dip at the start of the year and I traded Josh Allen for Kareem Hunt and my season was kind of down the tubes from there. So I love watching both those two guys play and I love, you know, I miss having that dip. So I think the Bills, this seems like a great connection. So I would imagine it could stick for a few years and I would be scared of them for the future for sure.
Vanna, Diggs is still fairly young, right?
Yeah. He's very young.
Yeah. And he's sick. He's so good, man. He goes up and gets it every time.
He is very good. He's 27. Julio's what? 31. So I guess he's middle of the pack there for wide receivers. But yeah, he's very good. These guys, you have to remember, like, not to get too into it, but you have to remember these guys had no preseason to get in touch with each other, to get in tune with each other, outside of like throwing some plays. You know, they're not practicing 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. They're just like, if they go to a field together, run routes, that's kind of like all they're getting. So like to see Diggs and Josh Allen connecting this well, this quickly is like, yeah, pretty eye opening, I think.
Yeah, I think they have some pretty exciting prospects for the future there. So it does seem unfortunate that the Bills are finally making a run for a division title and potentially a playoff streak if they can get one going. And it's the first time in forever that the Bills fans who've been waiting so long for this can't actually go and do it, you know, go and watch in person. And similarly, Monday Night Football, the Ravens are giving 2.5 points at home against the resurgent 9-3 Cleveland Browns, who, after so many years of torture and heartbreak, are finally good, it seems, and no one can go enjoy it in person. Lucas, for whatever reason, you seem to be an enormous non-ironic fan of the Cleveland Browns and players on the Cleveland Browns. What is going into that, and how excited are you about this season? Lucas, you may be muted. Okay, well, we cut the recording for a second, and upon further review, it looks like we lost Lucas. Don't know where he went, but instead of being concerned about our friend, we are going to just carry on. Only one game left here, but Vanna, what do you think about why Lucas loves the Browns so much? Because this has genuinely fascinated me.
Yeah, I don't know. Has it been just fantasy implications? Like, I know he likes Jarvis. I know he likes Baker. Did he have Baker last year at any point? I don't understand the fascination with the Browns. I'm not a Browns fan. I'm not a Baker fan. I think that it's sort of in the same realm or same spectrum as Lucas was in, you know, last year with the Jimmy Garoppolo. And there are two quarterbacks. I guess this is the only comparison I can kind of draw to this, or the only argument I can make for it. There are two quarterbacks that play – that have a lot of games during a fantasy season that are played pretty poorly, where they're, say, they're anywhere from like QB 18 to QB like 26. They have really bad performances. But they have 1 to 2 weeks a year where they are QB1, Garoppolo and Baker, where they have two weeks where they're, you know, they score something like 40 points. And that can be an aha gotcha moment for Lucas. And I think he lives for those. And Baker has given him a couple of those instances over the past couple of years. So maybe that's it. Maybe he's just like, he's with Baker so much and has so much invested in proving the haters wrong about Baker that he's just too invested at this point, and that's why he loves the Browns.
Okay, yeah, and we have now
I'm on the line, Luke.
He has popped back up on video. Luke, we got Vanna's take on why you love the Browns, but let's hear from you. What is it about the Browns?
I can't wait to listen to it because my phone might die again, and I apologize if it does. But what do I love about the Browns? You guys still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, everything, man. I love every single bit of it. I love that Jarvis throws a Baker. I love that Baker throws a Jarvis. I love just all the connections. They're 9-3. They're a great actual football team. Yeah, did it work out in fantasy for me? No. But are they having a great year this year? Yeah, they're having like the best year of their freaking franchise history, and I love it.
So on the other side here, Ravens, probably one of the bigger disappointments, I would guess, at least you know, compared to expectations entering the season, still giving 2.5 points on the road at Cleveland, a division opponent. Vanna, what do you think about that line?
I don't know. I'm kind of – after I just crapped on the Browns there, I kind of am on them because I don't really like the Ravens much at all this year either. Luke did trade for a division rival quarterback.
I know. What a great matchup that would have been. And yeah.
Yeah, he could have gone in. He would have had a Monday night sweat. Boys.
Five players, man. I was triple dipping Baker with Jarvis and Kareem, and then Hollywood and Lamar. Oh.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's I'm on the Browns in that game, I think, but I don't know. I think it's more to do with how bad I think the Ravens have been this year, and less to do with how the Browns have been good.
Yeah, the Ravens have surprised me. I would guess that at least one team does this every year, and I just have a bad memory of it, and this time next year I'll forget that it was the Ravens in 2020. But this is one of the more surprising kind of teams that I thought was going to be a powerhouse contender. Not even close to living up to those kind of expectations for me, but certainly not trying to say Lamar was a fluke by any stretch. I would guess that the Ravens are probably favorites to do a lot better next year and in the future than they have ended up doing this year. I don't know how much COVID goes into that, but actually another person that I'm curious what you think about as a head coach, particularly Vanna, no offense, Luke, is Harbaugh.
None taken.
Harbaugh. I think that Harbaugh is, in general, overrated. I think he's very good against Belichick. There's a lot of guys that will, and Shanahan, to much to his credit, and I think I've given him maybe too much credit on this podcast, but beat Belichick earlier in the year, like 34-3. Harbaugh is the one guy I feel like in the NFL over Belichick's career that hasn't really figured out a way to beat him, but has realized you have to just throw it up to variance and you have to make these big plays. And if the ball flips the right way to you, you can beat him. If not, then you have to, you know, you just have to chalk it up to they're better than we are.
Along kind of similar lines, coaches I was tempted to bring up earlier, but felt we had spent too much time on it then, but we'll bring it up now just to kind of wrap up the podcast, both Sean Payton and Pete Carroll.
Sean Payton is an interesting one. I don't really know where to go with Sean Payton. Sean Payton probably – he probably goes a little bit under in Andy Reid. And Pete Carroll's like below both of them. I'm not a big Pete Carroll fan. I think he's a great cheerleader. A great like players coach,
great gum chewer.
Great gum chewer. But in terms of actually coaching a football team, when you're not letting Russ cook, essentially, I think that goes to show kind of where you're at in terms of your football philosophy. He was quoted the other day after post game saying that he learned from an old school coach, I can't remember who, but that you need a 50-50 ratio pass to run, and that's how you win football games. So, like, someone saying that guy just doesn't have a clue.
That's essentially the John Gruden thing that I place on John Gruden that I don't necessarily mean about John Gruden, but that idea.
Yeah. Mm. Like, he's just quoting, like, 1970s football guys that are like, we need to establish the run. We need to make sure that we're running it every other play. We're passing it the alternative plays. And we're going to run it on first down. And it's just like, man, like, you just don't have a clue. Like, it doesn't take that. He could Google it. Like, it isn't something crazy that, like, these guys are paid millions of dollars to, like, figure out this new alternative strategy to throw the ball and throw it quick. It's like he could literally Google something better than the strategy he just said that he was trying to do postgame.
Yeah, I mean, I will never understand, and this is such an easy shot to take, but that just inclination to get tricky in the Super Bowl and not just hand it off to Marshawn seems like all you need to know about Pete Carroll. Either way, definitely I feel like the role of head coach is often overlooked in terms of how significant it is to a team's success. Probably not by the people who really know what they're talking about, but just by the casual fan, I think probably doesn't put enough weight on that sort of thing. And thankfully, we do not have a casual Vanna on our hands here. So let's, I guess, before we get out of here, get Super Bowl picks. I believe, Vanna, you're already on the record saying Packers are your pick at this point.
Yeah, let's go Packers.
Luke, you still all in on the Patriots, I assume?
No, I mean, if I'm having a pick, I would pick the Browns, man. Like, they're more likely to make the postseason, and they could just go on a run. So that's my pick. That's the team I'm rooting for. Are you asking me my pick, who I think is gonna, who I'm gonna put my money on is, I don't know. The Packers is such a lame pick, man.
Oh, dude,
it's a pretty lame pick.
How's it lame?
I don't know. I go with the Bucks if I'm going for straight money wise, man. Bucks. Yeah. Final answer.
Take your 7-5 Bucks, dude.
Dude,
deep losing streak.
You called me a last place bum, and look where you are. You got nowhere to be.
Oh my God, this guy's got his vendetta out.
Yeah.
So you waited this long. We're 2.5 hours into this, bud. Now you're bringing out the I called you a last place bum.
Yeah, like week 5. Week 5, you told me to shut up because I'm in last place, you bum. And here you are. Yeah, trying that helmet, man. That'll be the final words I say tonight in this podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. I will go with the Browns.
All right. thank you very much, Lucas, for taking so much time and so much battery life here with us tonight.
I appreciate
Vanna,
it.
Sorry?
He said I appreciate it.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
All right. Vanna, anything else you wanted to get out there before we wrap up?
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much of anybody else's time for things that they're not going to understand, but Andy came out with odds this week on the fantasy championship. And if anybody knows anything about just games in general, especially fantasy football, where we have no control over anything, variance plays a huge factor in it. And as Colin always says, equities run very closely together. We have some guys, there's six guys that are in the playoffs right now, two have a bye. So obviously they have a greater equity than everybody else. But there are three teams, so three of the four teams in the Royal Rumble have 8-1 odds. And that is just mind-blowing, I think, in terms of how poorly I think that those lines were done, because nobody should be 8-1 to win the fantasy championship after or at the beginning of the first week of the postseason.
Yeah, the way it has shaken out is – statistically, during the regular season, my team, Matt's team, and Isaac's team were pretty solidly ahead of the pack, and we all got like 3-ish to 1 odds on us to win the championship. And then the other three teams, Gabe, Christian Pieri, and Christian Winkelhofer, all were like 8-1. And I am totally with you. Like, I saw those lines and didn't bet on them because I literally felt bad about how inaccurate they were, and everyone else was already jumping on them, and I felt bad for Andy.
Yeah, I know. Luke got on them before me. I was going to go probably double the amount that I went on each person, but Luke got in there before me, and I just didn't want to, like, if one of those spikes, I don't – it's like they're just really bad lines. It's just exploiting somebody.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. So. I mean – in all likelihood, it probably will be Andy collecting all of the money that got put down on them. But yeah, in the timelines that they hit, he's going to get hurt. And those were not well thought out odds there. But yeah, I am very nervous about what lies ahead of me this weekend. I have a long history of losing in the first round of the playoffs, and Robert Woods is already not off to the hottest start here for me. But fingers crossed, and I still feel better about this team than pretty much any other team with which I have had to actually play a first round playoff game. So gonna be, I'm sure, just panicking all morning on Sunday, and hopefully by around 3 or 4, maybe 5, 6, 7 in the afternoon, I will be feeling very good until probably just having my heart broken on Monday night in one unforeseeable way or another, after having counted all of my chickens long before they hatched. But we will see how it all goes. Vanna, thank you so much for taking all the time with me here today.
Yeah, for sure, Colin. I had a great time. So
awesome.
Looking forward to doing it again.
Yes, and Luke has been off the call for a couple of minutes now. He was eager to get out of here. But we will let you all out of here now as well, and we will see how everything ends up going in week 14. Best of luck to you guys who are out there sweating your own fantasy football playoffs or NFL bets of whatever variety you are interested in. We will talk soon. Take care, gang.